supposed to go down there, there's a very wide wall.
Yeah. What do you want to say about S-Wine?
Well, S-Wine, they come into the country, they come in, I imagine, way back in 1920 anyway, must be 20, maybe before 20. Now, I wouldn't say, you ever get old Ira Johnson up there, he can tell you exactly when he come in. Country, they're old timers, and Martin Goodrich come in and George Goodrich at the same time with them. They all moved into the country, all those families. And Mrs. Johnson was the first white woman that ever lived on the Pine River that I know of. Just lived that far up. That's about 15 miles above. That one, what they used to call Little Prairie at that time. And S-Wine came in a year after Mrs. S-Wine and S-Wine. And they never did have any children of their own, but they had two adopted boys that they raised.
Those at the Pine Valley.
That's where Pine Valley is today. You can still see the old log buildings.
Yeah, sir. There's a flat there right on the riverbank.
There's S-Wine's buildings. And we hired my brother. When he was a kid here, 14 years old, Roy, 15 years old, he used to go up and help us wind cut birch wood every spring. They saw wood there for weeks there, sawing up wood for the winter, like, you know, the seed saw, birch. And that's how we got to know S-Wine very well. And S-Wine was an outfitter in this country at that time, but he had no territory, but he used to hunt Bull Moose Mountain. Roy, my brother, when he was 12 years old, he was horse wrangler for that swine on Bull Moose Mountain, the first hunting party that ever went in there. And Frank Fredo was the head guide, and Pete Kelly was the guide for the hunter, and that swine himself. But Frank Fredo was the man that showed him how to get into what they call Doctor's Lake, way back in on the head of the Windfall Creek, and right on the divide to the
How long has Otto Allen been here, you know?
Otto Allen come here in 1923, and the first man he worked for in this country was Morris Burkett. He lived here, and Morris come here after he got out of the army. He came here in about 1920, Morris here.
Mm-hmm.
That's about the time that Harry Jarvis put that trading post in there, I think, around 1920.
Mm-hmm.
He first moved it from Lone Prairie over here. And when Harry put the trading post in here, that's when the shorter end is moved into Mobley Lake.
How far away from the trading post from Milo Gaines in Lone Prairie?
Well, now you got me. I don't know exactly where that trading post ever is.
Where
it was, he told me where it is. I think it was on the trading post used to be on what they call the Weatherall Ranch. If you, anybody can tell me where the Weatherall Ranch is.
Yeah, I think that's
where it was.
I can find out.
Yeah. This is Weatherall. There's a lot of people in there. Some white people are in there. The people were dirty. He come into that country in about 1914 sometime.
Mm-hmm.
Into Lone Prairie. He was the first one today. He cut the trail from East Pine Inn to Lone Prairie, the first wagon trail.
Cross country there,
yeah. Over the top of that mountain, East Pine Inn to Lone Prairie. But old Milo Durney. And Laverro Durney, he's the oldest boy, the oldest
yeah.
White boy that's ever come into Lone Prairie.
Yeah, yes, sir.
He wasn't born there, but he was born before they come there. And Durney's family, there's a fairly large family.
Yeah.
But I think there's about four or five kids that's buried somewhere on them flats.
Some Weatherall
kids.
Some Weatherall kids, too.
Weatheralls and Wharton Bees. They were the next ones to come in after Durney was Wharton Bees.
Wharton Bees.
They come in from Montana, from the States.
And about what time did they come from?
They come in about 1915, I think, around there.
What did they do anyway? Like stockhead, right?
Well, they had a few horses and a few cattle, and they trapped. Everybody trapped at that time for a living. It's the only way they could make a living. They couldn't make anything out of cattle, but they kept them for milk and biscuits.
Where did you say they came from?
They came from Montana.
From Montana. Mm-hmm.
And Durney came from Idaho.
Yeah.
His brother is a game warden in Idaho. And he has my own Durney. He's still a game warden.
Yes, I wonder how come they named the mountain Mortonby after them?
Well, they named that mountain Mortonby. I don't know why, but they just named after what?
Yeah, just because they're full-time.
Yeah, they're about full-time. Well, I can tell you why they named the mountain Mortonby, because that was their trap line.
That was their trap line. Yeah. You know the first name?
Davey. Davey, one of them. That's the oldest one. There was one of them living here in Dawson Creek, and I'm not sure if he died here a year or so ago or not.
Yeah, I'll look it up to find out.
But you try and look him up and see if he's still alive. No, but I think he passed away from a year long ago. I didn't know anything about it.
Did they have a family out there?
Oh, yes. You take
it. Well, give me some more time. Give me some time.
Well, Dave's oldest daughter, that's Irene. Madden.
Mm-hmm.
Her husband died here about 2 years ago now.
Yeah.
At Gilbert.
I'll see if I can get a hold of her.
You get a hold of her and she'll tell you the whole history.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, that's very, very good.
I think she's still living there on the farm as far as I know, and they live about a mile off the main highway.
At Gilbert?
Outside.
The Gilbert?
Yeah, right where that road comes out in Sunset Prairie.
Yeah.
You just take the other road and keep going. Go down there about a mile and a half, and come to the ranch.
Yeah. I'll show you that. So I want to learn about more history on this little word here.
They told me a lot of their history, but I can't remember it all.
No.
By the time of the Second World War, you see, that's when all those people moved out of that country. You see, when the war broke out, the Second World War broke out in 1939.
Yeah,
they started moving out of there about 19, Weatherall's moved out spring of 41. They were about the last ones to move out of there.
Yeah, well, they didn't bother them. They left the country. They didn't go look for them First World War.
No, but I mean, that's for the Second World War. They moved out of Lone Prairie.
I see
that Lone Prairie.
Yeah,
left all them places and everything just moved out. The Weatherall went farming in Gilbert.
Mm-hmm.
He bought a place out there. He had a bunch of sheep. Weatherall was a rancher, what he was. He kept a lot of cattle and a lot of sheep. He must have had about 300 sheep when he moved out. I helped him get the sheep out of there. I was trapping them. The river was awful. I would come around. And old Frank, he wanted to go around the east fine anyway, so we went back through the Lone Prairie and we camped with Weatherall last night.
Mm-hmm.
And he was leaving the family that was gone, and him and just the one boy chasing him a sheep. So we went along with him to where that sheep.
I wonder what the year is the Pine Rivers were so high, because you see, that's way up, high up in them.
Well,
this is awfully high.
The Pine Rivers, the highest ever seen in the Pine Rivers, 1948. But before that, it was higher than that one time before, but it wasn't in the spring, it was in July.
In July, yes.
That's the time that old Frank Federal lost all those cattle. You see, we traded Frank Federal a lot of cattle for that trap line.
Yes.
When we came into this
country. So he lost the cattle, didn't he?
Well, he didn't lose the cattle, but he lost all his hay. He put up his hay, on the 1st of July, and about the 15th of July, well, you had all chopped up,
yeah,
and it just washed the whole width off of them flat.
It is.
That's the highest
part of what you think it was.
It's only 1 acre, and that's where his house was sitting if it wasn't underwater.
The last year was underwater.
Yeah, I said, would be where the houses are now, but
the garden was
there. The garden was the house, and the wells, and then you flat.
Where the garden was, the garden was underwater last year.
Yeah, it would be over there.
Yes,
I've seen that underwater.
But what year was that?
I think last year is about the highest water there has been since 1948.
Yeah, that's probably in Lund, Jan, by the down there.
Yeah. That's in the spring.
Wonder what year that's your high water was?
1948. The other high water was in 1947.
47?
Yeah.
Tell me, you remember this?
Spring of 48.
Yeah,
it'd be the spring.
Yeah.
I come down on it on a raft, so that's how I know.
Yeah.
And we wrapped it right up within 100 yards of where the old buildings used to be there. Mm-hmm. I think where the buildings were there, where Nichols is living now, it used to be away this way on the other flat. Like where you go down that hill, before you turn and go that way, where the buildings are straight across.
55 stairs.
Yeah. I think they're still there.
15 stairs.
Yeah. But that was all underwater, except where the buildings, right where the buildings were. And you couldn't get out of there unless you used a raft. That's the only way you get out of there.
There was another pause in the tape here, and then they resumed the story.
Frank tried to see deeper than one.
Pretty tough trapping, would it be?
Yeah, it was. We used to read all them cabins when we built them, you know. We built with great big verandas out, about 8-9 feet out.
Yeah.
That's the only way you could find it. Yeah. You know, went back up after Christmas.
Yeah.
You seen that hole down there, and we had always piled a lot of wood under there, you know, and there was wood down there, a little hole. So we dug a hole, and you used to slide right like a slide down there, like we're like a bunch of beavers. And dark in there, you couldn't see nothing in them galleries, you know. The windows were all blocked up and everything. Just used cattle in there for like all the time. Well, we weren't in them all the time. We were gone for sometimes 2 to 3 weeks at a time. We camped out most of the time. We didn't have too many camps.
So do
we. We camped out in the food tree all the time. We didn't get better off life. I think. But that's the end of the day. You
put in the times that there never was too many criminals. Years ago, wasn't there? Very many.
Yeah, years ago. There wasn't too many. There was a certain amount. Yeah. Willie trapped with me in there once. Yeah. There was always Timberwolves there around Baker's there. Two families hung around, seven or eight in a bunch.
How many was that south of the forks?
But in 1933, that's long before Willie came up here, years ago, there used to be as high as 30 Timberwolves in a bunch, you know. There were a lot of wolves going like that. And the Timberwolves, they cleaned all the deer. There used to be a lot of deer in that Big Bend country there. 1935, 36, 37, deep snow winters. And the snow crusted, there's a lot of Chinooks, and they crust that snow, there's like ice. Still wouldn't hold deer up, you know.
Still,
man could walk the top of the snow crust. But they'd fall through that and they could go nowhere. They'd just help us and wolves just slaughtered them.
Yeah.
And that's why the night of spring of 37 there wasn't a deer left in that country.
Yeah,
everywhere. And from traveling from Baker's up to as far as where the forks of the river is, we used to keep, well, even when Willie McLean was with us, we counted 30 dead moose on that river there that the wolves killed. And one morning we was going up there about 7 miles above Baker's, and we had to shoot a cow and a calf moose there that they had them all chewed up there, and they're alive yet on the river.
I never got that, yeah.
Did he tell you about that?
No.
Never, right?
Forgot about it, yes.
Yeah, he just trapped in there that one winter with
Boyer
in there, and then he bought this other calf right down the river. But he trapped the winter before that with Joe Kelly on the headwaters of the Burn River. Joe, he was doing the headwaters of Burn. And I let them build a cabin right across from Baker's across the river. And they used that cabin there, that was their home cabin, and then they'd go over to the burn, travel about 8 miles on my line, and they get their own line.
Yeah.
River. But they had no cabins on the burn, they just used these lean-tos, you know.
Yeah.
Built like a A-frame, and they built a fire down in the center of them.
Yeah.
That was their head camp. So they built 10 people. That time they didn't build too many cabins.
And how far south of the forks was Baker's cabin? Hello?
To the forks of the river from Baker's up the river, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, we used to call it about 20 miles, but I don't think actually it is 20 miles. It's probably about 16 miles.
Like 16
miles, maybe, the most. Up there. To the forks of the river. Frank used to have a cabin up there, but that was all rotted down the time I traveled
yeah.
there, you know. Well, we used to camp in it. We had an open fire. They used to eat them old when he trapped in there, he built his own fireplaces. He never had a stove in a cabin.
Is that right?
So he couldn't tie a stove without getting very well at these stove pipes. So they just built a fireplace out of rock and mud.
Would they?
Yeah, and them fireplaces are still standing.
Is that right?
Yeah. They mix up a bunch of grass and stuff mixed all over with mud. Plastered it all over the rocks and all it up. And the fireplace was there, but the roof is just falling, you know. So we used to just make a big fire inside the cabin, a little bit smoky. It all snowed under, you couldn't see it anywhere. You could dig a hole down in there and get in. But it's warm in there, it's warmer in camping up on top of the snow, you know. And when you had to camp on top of the snow, well, it took a long time to melt the snow down to the ground.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
When you did get down to the ground, you might have a great big hole in there and all rough, you know.
Take your snowshoe, and shovel it out.
And your fire would be laying on one side this way, and you'd be up above your fire all the time.
Yeah.
It's always cold if you're not lower than the fire.
Yeah.
Well, that's the reason we camped in there. Even if it did, we did get a little bit of a smoke tan, it didn't hurt.
It's hard on the ice.
Balsam wood and spruce, that's all there was in that country to burn.
Oh, Mr. Sir.
Talking about these old timers and that old oak, he is the oldest timer, I guess, it's still with them around the world. But this is the last one that died, the oldest timer that died on this land.
I suppose, eh?
Yeah. Yeah. That's Fred Napoleon's wife. Like Fred Napoleon down here, he's married to his oldest, to Doki's daughter.
Oh, yeah.
That ain't the oldest daughter. The oldest daughter died well back. Most of Doki's family was dead, the old man Doki. But he was the chief of the West End Reserve.
Was he Beaver, is he?
He's a Beaver. And he come here when he was just a young lad, I guess. When he claimed to be 100 years old when he died, he was still riding horseback. He died with double pneumonia. I guess you remember Doki, don't you?
No, I don't know.
He used to ride through Chetland there a lot of times, and they're building that road there, you know. You weren't there then.
No, I wasn't there then, no.
Right down on the saddle horse, you know, and he always had a feather in his hat. You know, he just wore a small hat, like one of these here vest hats.
Yeah,
like
one feather,
you know. And one big feather sticking up there. He's a tall, slim man, stood 6'2".
Yes.
And talked very broken English, very hard to talk to, and he didn't like a white man too good anyway.
Oh.
I don't think he cared too much for a white man.
No, it could be.
But anybody that's lived here for years and years will get along all right with Doki as long as you stayed away from him and left him alone.
Left him alone, eh?
Stayed off that reserve up there. It was a long time. But he used to come down to, after they started to have dances here, you know, he never allowed his girls. The girls were awful bashful anyway. Well, he'd come down to dance. The girls, after they're about 20-some years old, they start coming down to dances, you know, the boys come down to dances. Old Doki'd come down and he'd look at that dance, you know, and he'd say, "Aye," he said, "no good," he said, "white man crazy," he said, "are everybody gonna be crazy," he said, "in this country," he said, "pretty soon, my girls, my boys, everything," he said, "no good," he said.
You?
Too much drink, too much everything. He was against guest setting, he was kind of alcoholic.
Yeah.
And they all cracked up.
Yeah.
We used to shout the drink was raised in brewers.
We shipped tons of bran up to Whitefish Lake when they had a store to mill it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, must make the home brew.
Yeah, they make the home brew out of it. Raisins and bran and sticks. Better brew up.
They
drank a lot of it around here, that raisin brew, boy. Rice.
It's fairly potent stuff. The rice, too. It's fairly potent, too, you know.
Yeah. That rice is, they make it strong. Make it right, that's the Chinese way to make it.
Tucky.
Yeah. The oldest son, he got killed over here on this Jackfish Road between Jackfish Lake. That's on the old road. Not the road.
There's a road through there yet.
Mm-hmm.
Cut that road years after. The road didn't used to go to Lincoln and the country. It used to go way back down towards Little Prairie, but near 3 miles, and then go across the Wabi Creek and then come back. And then Pete Kelly blazed that road through there in 1940, I think, or 42. No, 40, 40. 1940, he blazed that road through there, and everybody just said,
you get in your paper cutting roads.
You just, everybody went together and cut a trail.
It was bullish and
just a wagon road anyway. But they cut it through there. It made it a lot shorter to get to East from Jackson. And you didn't have that creek to muck you with. That bridge was washed out all the time. That water creek, and when you got over there, well, you're on the head of the creek, and there's only a little bit of the creek. And you put a bridge on it, saved it. High water wouldn't take it over. But on that's the old Jemerson Trail, you see. Well, that's the way Jemerson come in that time. And Tom Napoleon, that used to be here, that's Tommy, he's dead now, and the old lady is dead too.
Yes.
He was Jemerson's guide. Was Tommy Napoleon was the guide for Jemerson the time they cut that trail from East Pine to Hutchinson. And it went down across the reserve here at the East End and went up around by Butcher Lake and through that way. That's the way the old Jemerson Trail went down the hill.
Yeah.
Across where they used to have the ferry there. That's where it come out at, right where the ferry used to be at Hutchinson's Hope that time. That's where old Mackenzie wintered, as far as they know.
Where was it this?
Right there, right where that ferry used to be, on this side of that river. That's where they figure. But it must have been Mackenzie that wintered there.
That's the time
that he got the explorer.
That's right, the explorer. I imagine.
And there is mounds of rocks there, you know, all over there. See, Mackenzie lost some men in there that way, with scurvy. Died with scurvy. How many died, nobody knows.
Yeah,
but the old buildings, you can see where he put up them log buildings. The mounds and everything is there. Well, there's nobody in Hutchinson can remember anyone else to build them.
No.
Them buildings were there.
South side of the
river? Yes, it's on the south side of the river.
South side of the river.
It's on this side, right? Who was this side here on the whole?
Yeah.
Because there's a flat there, you see.
Yes.
A flat. You don't have to climb up on the bank, but
no.
The whole thing. No. It's all cut bank.
Yeah, these are easy to get water there.
They cut that down to get down into the river. But that's where they figure Mackenzie wintered. That's so. I was talking to old Bill Kruger, all them old Guy Robinson, all them, and that's what they claim it must have been. Long time. Didn't figure there's any white men anyway outside of him that could have been in that country that many years before. It was a building to be rotten at that time.
Maybe 75 years ago. It's going to be rotten, that's for sure.
Since Alexander Mackenzie didn't winter at the river, the mounds of stones and remnants of old buildings may possibly be the remains of old Fort Rocky Mountain Portage House, which Simon Fraser built.
Well, they were locked down pretty well. They were made by Robert Sumner in 1914, sometimes, or 13, when he first come in. The guy come in here, and then he went back down and got his wife 3 or 4 years after he come up this country first on his own, and then he trailed all the way from Montana with a wagon and team, a couple of pack horses, all the way in to where he took that homestead of Lynn Creek.
That's a long way to trail.
And no roads. He could only go so far with a wagon, and then he came in with pack horses from then, and he packed that wagon in there on pack horses. He packed the Moore machine in on pack horses.
Edson Trail?
Hayride and all that junk they packed in there. The only other transportation they had was on the Peace River and come up with a boat.
Yeah.
He packed
same as Harry Garvin. He was the first man that ever packed them on machine rake into here, into this Mobley Lake.
He was, eh?
And he packed that in so much as hope. And the way they used to pack them, you know, they never put them on a horse. But they packed them right on the side of a horse. They made two poles on, you know, between two horses and tied them together. Tied them and then laid their stuff on top.
Yeah.
Big weave. They come up on the riverboat, Harry first owned this here, you see. Actually, Harry never did own this place down here.
Oh, yeah.
Where he had the trading post that belonged to old Paquette. Old Charlie Paquette, that's, he was a Frenchman, which was Morse Paquette's dad.
Yeah.
And he was a good, but Frenchman was from Quebec. Come right from Montreal, down in Quebec, there, somewhere close to Montreal. But then he was in Prince George for years, and he was all over the country.
Yeah, he told me this Quesnel was that it was.
Yeah, he was in a Quesnel and Monroe, and then he come in here, and then he got with a partner. See, he was Harry Garvin's partner, actually, when they first come in.
How many years ago was that? How many years ago would that been? Before your time, eh?
Time ago. I seen a picture of old Charlie when he first come in, the old lady, like Morris's mother, showed me a picture of Charlie when he first came into Prince George, and I forget, it's way back in 1901 or maybe before then. But that old lady was 96 years old when she died.
Yeah.
And old Charlie married her, and she was very young, so Charlie was 90, I guess, when he died.
He did.
Of course, then young. A few years that he lived, well, he left this place here, and that's why she come up here. She figured she could take that place away from Harry.
Oh, yeah.
But old Charlie give it to Harry.
Oh, yeah.
But Harry actually homesteaded for the reserve. He's down here now. That was where he never homesteaded. He, I guess he just bought it there, but that's where he did actually put up his hay and kept his horses and everything. And he had the place that was down here. But after when the Soto, the Indians moved over, and old Harry, he was JP here anyway, he was just a piece of the country. He was a big trader. Yeah, there were actually law. There was a law of the country at that time. There were no police here. There were never, when they first come to the country, they didn't know what a police was. You didn't go to your troubles for a policeman or to a policeman. You had any troubles to settle, you settled them with the individual.
Yeah.
That's the way they were settled, and the man wasn't liked in the country. Well, it didn't take us very long to put him out.
Yeah.
About 12 hours to get moving. Moving, and they put him on a raft or something, put him on it, get him down the river. Told anything or done anything wrong.
No.
And if you didn't trade with the Hudson Bay Company when I come in this country, you wouldn't be here either. You wouldn't be living.
We're all kinds of traders.
Yeah. Right. They just make us a tough problem.
This story will be continued on another tape.
I said that several times before there was a man lived there in the Swede. Lived there years and years ago. Well, might have come in there probably 15 years after Frank Federal came into the country. And then there, Frank was the first settler that was ever in there, the first man that ever home for the settlement. And then the Swede came in there.